Becoming a mother has been hands down the most meaningful and transformative experience of my life. It has also been one of the loneliest. If you know me, or if you've been here a while with Corner Office Breakdowns, you know that my postpartum periods of time with both my children were really, really difficult. I experienced postpartum anxiety, postpartum depression, you know, with Ajna, my first daughter. It was during COVID. And so the loneliness that I felt was very, very real. And I'm a reader. I have read so many books on motherhood. I read all the blog posts, all the birth stories. I followed all the, you know, mom influencers on social media. And I kept coming up devastatingly short. I didn't really know where to turn for a version of motherhood that felt authentic to me and what I was experiencing, but also felt a bit more real. Motherhood is marred with toxic positivity. We are meant to be grateful and in awe and accepting of all of the hardships and physical issues that come along with pregnancy and becoming a mom. And so to find a place where there's a more radical point of view on what it means to become a mother, be a mother, or simply to mother others was profoundly valuable to me. Mother Tongue Magazine is the source that I turned to and continue to turn to for the version of motherhood that feels most mine. And I'm not the only one to feel this way. They have accumulated an incredible following. They are attracting some of the most interesting female-oriented brands as their advertisers. Miranda July is on the cover of issue 6, which also dropped this week. And Melissa and Natalia are just wonderful, wonderful people who also got caught in the trap of who am I, what am I meant to do, what is the meaning of my life and my career after having their children and after COVID hit and their careers had to pivot. And they really infuse that experience of uncertainty and hope into Mother Tongue Magazine. I am so excited to have them. It was such an important conversation for me to have during the time that I had it about a year ago. And it made me realize how much so many of us crave being in community with others who can just share real experiences, the ups and downs and the dark and the light. And so I am in the deepest admiration of Melissa and Natalia, who have built something so beautiful and are now getting all of the attention that Mother Tongue Magazine deserves. Here's the conversation. I hope you enjoy it.
We are here today because I encountered Mother Tongue Magazine on Instagram once upon a time. I don't even know what y'all had posted, but I was like, oh my God, this singular post meant so much to me. And, you know, I clicked on it and I felt like I was like entered into a portal of the most evocative, like advanced, evolved perspective on motherhood that I had ever seen out in the marketplace, quote unquote. And, you know, I have teeny kids and have spent the last 3.5, 4 years just in the depths of motherhood and grappling with my identity through motherhood, my body through motherhood, you know, my societal role, what it looks like to get back to work, what it looks like to deal with the pandemic and childcare. And, you know, we all know the list goes on and on and on. And it was the first time I actually felt there was something out there that like recognized me back. And like, I felt like I was in dialogue with Mother Tongue in a way I had never felt before in this new identity that I was embodying. So I cherish it. Like it is, I feel like I'm going to cry. It was like a very, it held me in a very tender moment. And it's still holding me because I am still in that tender moment of, you know, being a mom these days. And so, you know, you guys say Mother Tongue is a mom magazine for the now. If you could just, you know, start right there, like tell me where this idea came from. And also, can you tell me anything about Mother Tongue? Like just the name itself, I was like, ooh, yeah, there's something there.
Well, everything you just said was just incredibly flattering and makes us feel so good. Just want to put it in a bottle and my nightstand.
I can write you a note. Yeah. I'll handwrite you a letter and
I'm not going to make you do more work at flattering us. But yeah, the name, I guess we could start with the name. Mm. Natalia and I started riffing when we started talking about doing this magazine, and that was kind of towards the start of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We were both at home taking care of the kids, and kind of fulfilling these full-time stay-at-home roles that we had never kind of envisioned that we were going to do, because we had these situations where we were kind of part-time working. Mm-hmm. And kind of had this like quote unquote balance going. And then the balance kind of went out the window and we kind of stopped and looked around and compared notes. We were having conversations about like, you know, what are we looking to talk about? What are we looking for? Right. Mm-hmm. Natalia, do you want to jump in here about, I was going to talk about the name, but then I felt like I had to give a little bit more background about how the conversation started going.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, going back just like a step further, Melissa and I met over 10 years ago in London. We were both working as editors. We had sort of a ships passing in the night moment. Melissa was leaving London just as I was arriving. We had an adorable coffee on the steps next to St. Paul. I remember it like it was yesterday. And had this kind of very instant connection, but we went off, lived our lives, you know, happened to have children exactly at the same time without sort of knowing it, reconnected early days of pandemic. And as Melissa said, we found ourselves in these like, wait, sorry, I'm a stay-at-home mom now. That is not, that's not what I signed up for. Mm-hmm. As so many women saw themselves across the country, across the world at that time, right? And we were having these really lively, engaged conversations about how that felt to us and how we sort of were struggling with this idea that professionally the things that we had spent the past 10 years plus working towards and putting together sort of went out the window in one way or another almost overnight. And, you know, we were really grappling. Like you said, like in the throes of motherhood, our children were a bit older than yours are now, but nonetheless sort of like, okay, what does it mean to be a woman in this moment? What does it mean to be a mom in this moment when the world looks entirely different than anything that we've ever known in our generation? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how much of our identity had kind of been attached to this, like, you know, mix of, you know, working at something that like we found a lot of fulfillment in and being a mother. And of course, like I feel whenever this conversation comes up, it feels like a very passé conversation to kind of compare like working moms with stay-at-home moms. And of course, everyone is working insanely hard, exactly. You know, and there is no part-time and full-time and all of that. And I think we, you know, we're the first ones to say like, goes without saying how much we respect and admire like the people who, you know, do see themselves, you know, as stay-at-home moms. And I think we had always just been really honest with ourselves that we didn't, you know, and had never done this kind of like, what if exercise of like, you know. So I think we're both kind of really reeling at the kind of impact that had on our sense of identity.
Of course. Of course. I literally couldn't imagine, because similarly, like, you know, our entire generation started off in a very professionally entrenched moment in time, right? Like, there was a recession and we all went to college, or most of us, like, we all kind of strive to do the best we could and get the best grades and be in clubs and get the best jobs. And, you know, I feel like our generation was born sort of ambitious in a way that other generations weren't, or other generations may not be moving forward, and ambitious in the very traditional sense of what success looks like, which is money, title, like, you know, trajectory, moving upwards in the world versus like outwards in the world. And so I can't even imagine how that felt from an identity perspective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and I think it was just sort of this frustration, I suppose, of course, with the situation at hand, but also sort of when we were looking around in the media landscape and sort of asking each other, well, where are these conversations taking place? Yeah. Like, aside from between friends, you know,
exactly.
on text message. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it was like so many things are, it was simply a matter of being like, okay, we feel like there is room for a more challenging and nuanced and diverse perspective in the mm-hmm. motherhood space. Mm-hmm. And let's try and make it. Let's try and build that platform to include more voices and have more forthright conversations, because this sort of traditionalist picture of motherhood that has dominated mainstream media for so long, mm-hmm. I mean, that all went up in smoke, as we all know. And it felt like it was really time to come out with something that looked and felt and like read differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And where was, so what's so interesting, and, you know, in issue 2, which is the first issue I ever like read through, or maybe it's in issue 3, but Amanda Monte has this piece, All Things Considered. And honestly, and I wrote this to you guys, like, I've never felt that much mental jujitsu, like cognitive dissonance happening in my brain than I did when I was reading that, because I started off being kind of offended. Like, she was saying anything related to the hardships of motherhood is kind of trite. And then she like ventures into this space where she's like, oh, but like, it's completely normal to want to leave and be like, fuck this, and run away and start over. And then she talks about the flippancy of like a think piece as a way to describe women's writing on women-oriented topics. Like, there is a holy shit turn at every corner with that piece. And, you know, I was part of this dialogue that was taking place. We all were around the pandemic, where we were all questioning what the actual F is going on right now. How are we ever going to survive? Do we have any choice in the matter? And then layered on top of that is this, you know, everybody just having an opinion, everybody piling on each other, everybody saying similar things, but nothing truly happening.
Right.
And the most devastating part of that is now we are, you know, three plus years later, and we're going backwards. Like, now we've lost bodily autonomy. We've lost things like affirmative action, you know, just there's no progress on things like gun control. Like, all of these conversations that came to a head around race, gender, sexuality, socioeconomic status, safety, so on and so on, nothing has been resolved. And so Amanda's piece kind of left me feeling so, like, it was so real, but it was almost too real. Like, it left me feeling like I didn't know what the way forward was and what the way forward is. And that's sort of the thing I want to unpack with you most, both of you, because we are all thinking very similar things, trying to change the world in very similar ways, awaken people to, you know, the way women and other people beyond women, but at the core women, have been struggling for so long. But what is the point? Like, we've committed our lives to something, and I'm like, well, that piece just made me think, what is the point?
Well, I think the king, I mean, yeah, there's a lot there. And I realized that we never answered your question.
Yes, the mother tongue question.
Magazine, but I actually, it's funny because I think they actually tie together. And I think it's this idea of like, there is value in sharing stories, even when it's with people who agree with you. Like, you talk about this whole preaching to the choir thing, and like, a lot of that is happening a lot of the time, right?
Yeah.
And still, like, it's like there is this kind of sense of like creating community through sharing those stories. And it's very easy to get disheartened, I think, at like the lack of progress and, in fact, backward movement. And we do, and we are, you know, and there is not an answer for, like, I mean, I guess it comes down to like, you just can't give up, right? Like, what is the alternative, right?
Yep.
But I think Amanda's piece really was kind of an argument for community building through sharing stories. And I think the name of the magazine is also about that. Like, Mother Tongue is this idea of like, no, we are not all the same. In fact, we are all quite different. And this magazine is really interested in hearing those different perspectives. But is there somewhere in there where, like, hearing these different perspectives, talent sharing these different stories, like looking at something through someone else's eyes, like there is a commonality, there is a mother tongue. And it is this idea of like, you know, is motherhood that tie for people?
Mother tongue took me to a place when I first heard it of like finally giving words and like linguistic to a conversation that just never had them before. And that's why when I first heard, like, saw the name, I was like, ooh, that hits so deep, because it's like we're at the origin of this language that needs to be created and these stories that need to be told. Like, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it, but it is so necessary and so late in the game to have never really had that place. And I think what you all have birthed is a very, I mean, distinct and unique way of talking about motherhood and womanhood and all of the topics that sort of live beyond that too.
Yeah. I mean, I think coming back to Amanda's piece, you know, and in a way her piece is kind of taking stock of what we're trying to do, you know, every issue on a bigger scale. But I think it's this idea that storytelling is a kind of activism, you know, in and of itself. And also, progress and change tend to be slow, you know, and I think going back to sort of our generation and the temperament of our generation, I think we're very impatient, which has a lot of benefits. And, you know, it ties in with that notion of ambition that you talked about. But I think, you know, if we look at the discourse around motherhood in the past few years now versus pre-pandemic, it has changed.
It has.
You know? Like, there's actually been enormous sort of evolution in that space. You know, there's a lot more being written about the experience of motherhood, even in mainstream titles, you know? And I think that ability of great writing and great storytelling to connect with that community that, you know, as Melissa mentioned, that we're trying to build, and like the fact that one person, you know, reads a piece and goes away and says, oh, God, that was so gratifying, you know, I feel like I saw myself in that. I mean, that's enough. You know, I think that, and it's so interesting to us because every issue, you know, we of course have our sort of like pet stories, you know, yeah. Melissa would, like, love One Piece, I'll love another. And we never know what people will gravitate towards.
Yeah.
And that's always really interesting to us because, like, the feedback is sort of like one person latches onto this story, one person latches onto another, you know, and it just goes to show, like, experiences are so broad and different, right? And that's our job, is to try and tap into all of those various variables and then create a source of connection.
Right, right.
I would say too, like, I feel like you're being so generous, Ambika, about kind of like saying, like, you know, how original the magazine is. And of course we, like, happily accept that. But I think, like, you know, when we started, it's, yeah, we're not the first ones to do sort of nuanced reporting on these subjects.
Yes, true.
You know, we're very much not. But I think the thing that was maybe different and resonant was this idea that, like, speaking to mothers, but not talking about kids or parenting. You know, the kids and the parenting is not the main event.
Yes.
The sort of experience of being a woman in the world is the main event. Through this lens of, you know, the identity that identity shift that happens when you're a mother. And the other piece, I think, also goes to this idea of, like, the mother tongue title, which is, like, tongue, like, both Natalia and I kind of really kind of were attracted to having the word tongue in there because it's, like, not feminine or pretty or like.
Like, so unless it's a quite visceral reaction.
And yeah, it's awkward. And I think, like, this goes back to kind of the other differentiating point, which, like, we'll kind of take on, is that, you know, the design is different, right? Like, the kind of aesthetics of it is different than what you would typically associate with motherhood. And I think
so different.
Yeah, that was definitely part of it. And we both had a background in design writing before this. And we kind of, in our conversations, we kind of asked, like, well, why aren't we kind of compelled by what's out there? You know, like, why don't we think that's for us? I mean, we're moms, we're women. Why are we not consuming the media that's available? You know?
Yeah,
so
that's so
part of it was that visual challenge and that kind of differentiator. Like, this is for you. This doesn't, like, hit you over the head with, like, little kids and pink and, you know. Right.
Perfect pool, perfect garden, perfect house.
Exactly.
Soft lighting, sort of a ring of light around everything.
Definitely. And I'm wondering too, you know, the roster of contributors you have at Mother Tongue is incredible. Like, some of at least my favorite thinkers and writers and, you know, feelers of the world appear in your pages. Like, what do you think is drawing all of these people in to Mother Tongue?
I mean, I think part of it is sort of coming back to what Melissa was saying, is this, the visual design element of it is that the way we tell these stories, first of all, there's space, right? You're not sort of limited to 500 words, you know, in a vertical of a bigger sort of media space where it's kind of lost in the mix. It's like, this is all we do, you know, very differentiated, and, you know, from issue to issue, the tone changes and so forth. But I think, like, having that dedicated space or platform or however you want to frame it, you know, is that there's not so many of those kinds of venues where you can really sink your teeth in and speak to people who, you know, are sort of, you know, in the thick of it as well, right?
It's funny, we were just talking to a writer that we're really excited to work with. I'm not going to say it yet because I don't want to jinx it, but she's contributing in issue 5. And she asked us about, like, a house style. Like, she was like, is there a house style I should be, you know, cognizant of?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, there's not. The house style is that, like, we really want, like, this mix of voices. Like, of course there is a tone. We are the editors. We are curating it all. Of course there is, you know? But at the same time, I think that's another appeal, that it's like, we're really interested in these distinct voices, you know?
Yeah. Every piece reads completely differently. Like, it's like you're taken from the mind of one person to the mind of the other person to the mind of the other person. And the designer you guys work with, is her name Vanessa? Mm-hmm.
Vanessa Saba. She's a fantastic. Oh,
yeah.
Just director. Like stunning, stunning. Mm-hmm. Like she's transporting you through in such a emotional way. And I think for me, what really has set this apart is it's the same almost to me as like an incredible book of short stories where somehow nothing can distract you. Like this is a quiet time. No one's going to disturb you. Grab your glass of wine, your joint, your whatever, your coconut water, and like sit and it's absorbing and it absorbs into you too.
I mean, that's the greatest compliment, and that's our hope with it. You know, I think we create it with that hope in mind that it's an invitation,
yes,
you know, to kind of take some time where you have it. You know, there's no expectation that you're going to read it in one sitting. We only make two a year.
Yeah.
So that gives you 6 months,
yeah.
You know. But I think, I think our fondest wish is that it is this kind of personal experience for people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that it feels intentional, right? It is an active choice to sit down with something tangible and engage with it, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just sort of aimless scrolling or having content pushed at you at a zillion miles an hour as we experience the world, right? Through our screens. Like this is definitely meant to be absorbed in a different way, slowly, and you know, slowness in our lives is sort of like a rare treat, right?
It is a rare treat. Yeah. I want to go back to the identity bit that we were talking about earlier. And, you know, part of Corner Office Breakdowns is about the professional, the work-oriented, leadership-oriented, output-oriented world that we've all spent lots of time in. But the other part of it is just the humanity of it all. Like, how does who you are, who you've become, you know, how your children have changed you, how COVID changed you. Like, how does all of that appear in this phase of your life and potentially then bleed into your work?
I mean, I won't speak for both of us here, Melissa, so like jump in. But I mean, I think when we started this project, I think I can say this part for both of us, is like we both were desperate for something to latch onto. Mm-hmm. That was ours, right?
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden we were in the situation where we were playing all of these roles at once, which was, of course, is like partly standard to motherhood under the best of circumstances.
Yes, truly.
But in these sort of early pandemic days, that was just so exaggerated. And it felt like there was nothing, at least in my case, that when the professional was sort of taken away, and that was something that was always really integral to how I saw myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, you know, yes, I am a mom, I'm a spouse, I'm a partner, you know, but that part was really, really lacking for me.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in those conversations we had in the early days, we were like, okay, like we need something that for a few hours during every day, during these very weird times, we can focus our attention outward, out of our own house, out of our own city, of our own little bubble, and think about something that's bigger picture, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't so much that we were seeking what this is today, because I don't think we knew that it would necessarily go that direction. At first, it was kind of a pandemic project, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, but yeah, so it's almost... sort of to answer your question, I think Mother Tongue, it started as a really personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, now it's really transitioned that like, yes, we're so passionate about it and we pour everything into it, but it's about everybody else's stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about showcasing those around. And, you know, Melissa and I are not sort of figureheads. We're really not. We're behind the scenes, which I think as editors is where we prefer to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's not about us in any way, shape, or form in that sense.
I had this like very weird question that I wrote, and then I think I ultimately deleted when I was writing out my discussion guide, which was, do you want to speak as mother tongue, or do you want to speak as Natalia and Melissa? Because that is such a, that is a really interesting distinction.
Yeah.
And then I took it out because I was like, no, I want them to speak as like the humans they are.
Yeah, of course.
But
course.
So many of us, because we've over-identified with our careers for so long, like it does. I'm a strategist, right? So I'm the same behind the scenes. Like I'm not the one creating the shiny object or accepting the awards. I'm the thinker. But all everything that happens in our brains and everything we create comes from us, right? Yeah. And so you, that intention that you set to pour your energy outward and your attention outward into a bigger picture thing, that is the reason why this exists. So yes, behind the scenes, but like so powerful, and what you've achieved from your covert spaces.
And that is incredibly kind. I think another piece that maybe we didn't mention, like when we were mm-hmm. starting out, is that we had this idea to do this project and mm-hmm. we started riffing on it. But you know, when you're riffing on a project, like, of course, like everyone has moments of like, yes, go. And then moments of, oh, maybe we should just scrap the whole thing, you know?
Oh yeah.
And I think the conversation that we were having then, was really about the fact that like, yeah, it was hard, but we were both in really privileged, you know, mm-hmm. situations. Mm-hmm. Like everyone was healthy. Everyone was safe. We still had income, you know? And so part of us felt like, oh, like, are we going to be these two women just kind of like, wow, my identity yeah. went away. Like, mm-hmm. it's so hard, you know?
Yeah.
We're very aware of it not becoming some kind of vanity project, you
yes.
know?
And the fix for that, we felt, and also I think the key to the format was elevating other people's stories, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. We didn't have any answers. We didn't feel like we wanted to be these ones who were like, hey, we figured it out. Listen to the lessons that we've learned. Let's tell you. Like, no, it was really, it was selfish in the way that we were looking for answers and mm-hmm. sort of to have conversations with people. Mm-hmm. And it's just really lucky that that also led to something that's been resonant for other people too, you know? Right. But I think it's not even just about kind of like, we don't want to be in the front of it. It's also that like, it actually wouldn't work if we were.
Yeah. Yeah. What's so interesting about it though. And, you know, even you saying, you know, you don't want to be this woe is me, like, wham, my identity went away.
Right, right, right.
But I'm laughing because I feel that so deeply. Like I think that way all the time too.
But I should say also at the time we were starting this, it felt extremely, even more sensitive to kind of yes. be talking about that kind of thing when
absolutely.
People, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. when people's absolutely. Lives really were at risk, people were putting their lives at risk to help other people. And, mm-hmm. you know, there was so much tragedy everywhere. And then there was also, you know, so much social kind of awareness that was taking place. And mm-hmm. I think like we were just, yeah, cautious, right?
Yeah. I think that's still a huge part of our job is to be cautious, you know, mm-hmm. especially because we live in an incredibly complicated country mm-hmm. With so much disparity. Mm-hmm. And I think one of like the things that we keep coming back to is that like we were frustrated with the fact that there were sort of certain versions of motherhood that seemed to be prioritized, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, why was one person's story or experience of motherhood more valid than another's?
Yeah.
And that's something that we constantly sense check in the magazines, that we really are trying to frame very different stories from mm-hmm. people from different backgrounds and walks of life and ages and cultures and mindsets mm-hmm. Because otherwise this is sort of just, you know, it becomes a vacuum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And you know, I think the motherhood community, mothering community, you know, there's so many different ways to slice and dice it, but generally has historically lived in that very positive rose-colored glasses. Like, it's so natural and instinctual. And we talked about this a lot when we did the Frida Mom campaign. Like, you know, not everyone is in a beautiful sundress back to a size 4 breastfeeding their children on an idyllic beach. Like, the scenario. But on the flip side of that, and, you know, something I've also been grappling with internally is grief, expressed pain, expressed mm-hmm. hardship being seen as complaining.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is such a fucking trap. I feel that we are all tiptoeing around all the time. It's like, mm-hmm. how can I share my experience in a way that helps other people feel like they're not alone or they can share theirs, blah, blah, blah. But in a way where people aren't just like, oh, she's playing the victim again. Yeah. Oh, she has so many gripes. Like, she doesn't have it that bad. I know she has a job. Like, you know, I don't know if societally we have yet figured out a way to reconcile what it means to be a woman and express grief and pain and trauma and sadness in a way that is palatable
mm-hmm.
to the outside world.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, no answers. This is just a question that's
no, even just that word palatable.
Yeah. I was just about to say
that's an interesting choice of words, you know, like,
yeah, tongue
has to be palatable, palate. Right? Yeah.
Right. It's like, it comes down to how it's packaged, right?
Exactly. I mean,
essentially what you're saying, like, mm-hmm. how do we package these emotions and experiences in a way that are easy for, I don't know, I guess easy for men to digest? Is that really what it comes down to?
It's an other women uh-huh. thing too, right?
Yeah, it is 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's something we've discussed quite a bit, Melissa, I feel like, and especially like in the early days, is like evolving this conversation in like from issue to issue, because I think there was sort of in our first issues, there was sort of this prevailing sentiment of anger across the country.
Uh-huh.
And those two issues were sort of fiery in that sense.
Yeah.
Then we had this conversation about like, okay, but it can't just, the magazine can't be sort of a continuous rant about the patriarchy, even if that is kind of what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't shout it. We can't be angry about it, because at some point then people stop listening.
Exactly. And you have in your letter from the editors in issue 3, which of course, like literally I highlighted this. You said, having kids in this world is nothing if not optimistic, an inherent stubborn belief that there will one day be a better setup that's worthy of their existence, accompanied by a persistent nagging question, how do we get there? And so even like you could feel your consciousness evolve from sort of being in the trenches with all of these deeply feeling women going through all of these like eras and eons of shit to a place of, okay, like, how do we harness this? What do we do with this? Like, what next? And that's, I feel, exactly where this conversation lives, is at the center of, we have been buried under many piles of shit. We can like see the light coming from the top, but how do we break through the surface? And how, I mean, that's one thing, but I just, to go back to the palatable thing, everything in our society, and I tend to speak in hyperbole, it's just because I'm dramatic, but not everything, most things in our society are packaged, Natalia, to your point, through whether it's the male gaze, the white gaze, the privileged female gaze. You know, there's so many conversations about white feminism and how it's so different. And what's so additionally, you know, amazing about Mother Tongue is it is so intersectional, like in truly in a deeply representative way that I genuinely don't believe has ever been done before. So I say that very earnestly, like I'm not trying to overcompliment anybody, but you know, this does not feel like it's packaged for a specific gaze to me. But what it does feel is it's somehow captured the essence of like the modern motherhood zeitgeist. And like, yeah, this is magic in a bottle. Like there is something really, you're on to something. But I just like, I sit here reading these magazines and I'm like, how are they able to toe the line between the toxic positivity, quote unquote, of motherhood, which we all know has been the dominant narrative forever. And now, you know, I think a lot of us have been in a space of toxic negativity, you know, like we can't see our way out. You know, if you guys read that Miranda Rake, I think is how she pronounces her last name, or Rake, article in Romper, like months ago at this point, where she talks about how every mom she knows is on antidepressants. Like we are kind of also in a place of toxic negativity. And I think we go back and forth, right? Like, as you said in your letter, having a child is inherently an act of optimism. But how can we express the pain and the grief and stuff without people being like, well, you should be solutions oriented? It's like, no, sometimes it's okay to not have a solution. Like, Natalia, to your point, storytelling is a form of activism. But how do you toe that line in your own work and in your own lives as you are editing like all of these perspectives and stringing them together of the darkness and the lightness of the experience of being a woman?
I mean, I think conversationally, it really is about your audience, right? Like at a certain point, you know who you're going to have a productive conversation with, you know, and you know who's like, I'm not interested in converting people to my side, you know, when I'm, right, when I need to vent or whatever.
Yes.
But I think in the magazine, I think in a funny way, they all have a dark and a lightness to them. And maybe that's the answer. Like, I don't think we've ever printed something that's just exclusively dark or exclusively light. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that's not a very satisfying answer. I think that is one of the things that helps us know that it's right for the magazine. We kind of know it's not right when it is exclusively one or the other, I think. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And I think we're constantly like in the editing process, it's a constant assessment of getting that balance right. Yeah. You know, and like we were sort of talking about, I mean, there's kind of phases, right? Like where in the culture, there's sort of an overarching emotion. And I think those have shifted and
exactly
so much in the past sort of 2 years that we're, you know, we're doing a sense check all the time about, you know, we're not trying to put out something that's sugar-coated, but also not sort of a, you know, a bitter pill. And it's very much how we commission and piece the chapters together is to create something that feels nuanced and expresses both of those things in interesting ways, because both of like the lightness and the darkness is part of everyone, right? Yeah. And it's part of every day, it's part of every month, it's part of every year.
Yes, absolutely.
So sort of finding the sort of gray area in between, mm-hmm. you know, that's mm-hmm. the part that we think is really interesting.
Yeah. And I do think that also, I mean, to me, there is a lot of activism in Mother Tongue, because there's a lot of, right, intersectional perspectives that you are bringing in. But then what you guys are making me think of now, and Melissa, based on what you just said about, you know, I'm not trying to convert anybody to my side, is so interesting, because there are two types of activism that inherently exist here. And one is like activism for my people, like for my community, for the people who see the world in the same way, for the people who have experienced things I have experienced. You know, it's like it's a camaraderie, it's a bringing people along, it's a feeling held communal sort of activism. And then there is the potentially slightly more, it's not like rebellious, it's definitely scary, of like trying to, or like activism for the purpose of awakening others to a different way of thinking and seeing and feeling. And that what you guys do has such potential to do both. But you're right in that it currently lives in a space of activism for my people. Like, mothers were in desperate need of something like this, and you guys came through and delivered it. And it's like, that is enough, right? That is, in some ways, exactly what people need, and exactly what you guys need, and exactly what I needed. Like, this truly was, to me, a beacon of my motherhood and postpartum experiences.
Yeah, but
I think,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, but I think, you know, the idea or that feeling of like, what's the point, is if we can't at some point convert, and not even convert, like that's so aggressive, but no, like
awaken is really nice.
Awaken. Yeah. Awaken other people. Like, hello, like there's millions of us over here experiencing these things that you have no idea. And yet we have read thousands of books by male leaders. We have read thousands of books about, you know, all sorts of shit that have not been done for women through the woman's lens, through a woman of color's lens. And so that's what I grapple with, and I'm not being very articulate about it. Like, I feel like I can't get the words quite right. But if we are not awakening others, like there's absolutely power to preaching to our own choir. But at what point do we feel compelled or the need to awaken others through our work?
I just want to say, so I will say, you know, when I was talking about sort of not, you know, talking to someone who's not receptive, that's more on the sort of, here's what's going on in my life.
Personal lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say that I think that through the magazine, the design signals to people that might not be interested in these stories otherwise. And I know people sometimes pick up the magazine not knowing what it's about and start reading and still don't realize that it's like motherhood specific. And we take that as a compliment because we really set out to say like, these stories should be interesting to anyone, you know, that we believe like motherhood is the backbone of society. And we're not saying, we're not just interested in talking to people who have chosen to be mothers, you know, everyone has a relationship to it. So I think like there is an ambition to signal to people who might not have been interested. And that includes mothers, because listen, we weren't interested before in media about motherhood. You know, and I think a big part of that is because the culture has convinced us that it's this one thing.
Absolutely. And I was very proud of myself, like when I was pregnant and stuff. I'm like, yeah, I'm not really reading much about, like, I don't need to have 20 books.
It's, but it's cooler to be like, that's not my thing. Yeah,
exactly. But it's not our thing, because our thing was we were thinking about motherhood in a very different way than what was being delivered to us at that time. And so I do think there's been an amazing sort of reckoning. But Natalia, sorry, I cut you off.
No, I was just gonna jump in and say that, like, I think, you know, when you're speaking about sort of this like conversion or however you want to put it, I mean, I do think that the magazine does seek to challenge, though. I don't think we push an agenda.
Yes.
But I think we quite pointedly ask hard questions.
Yes.
And we tell stories that are not necessarily, you know, relatable across the board. Like, I mean, this is just the one that's coming to mind. Top of head is like an issue two. We did a story about some fantastic women in London who have been strippers for a lot of their adult lives. They have young children, and that's not you know, professionally and experience, a lot of us necessarily are directly relating to, but their experience as a woman in the world is incredibly relatable. Their experience as a mother is incredibly relatable. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, one of the things that we strive to do is just to ask questions and sort of say, hey, you know, can you not see that there's a link between your life and this woman's life, even if at first blush you think there might not be? Mm-hmm. And I think that comes back to mother tongue as well, right? Mm-hmm. It's like fundamentally the question we set out to answer, like, can motherhood be some kind of common language? Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that we all come from extremely different stories.
Yeah. I mean, I'm flicking through because the piece you have with Angela Garbs, who I'm also obsessed with, like her book, Essential Labor, again, I was like, oh my God, I feel seen in a way I've never felt. But that piece, Close Encounters with her mother, it's staggering to me how motherhood cannot be seen as this universal language because we all have mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not yet at the point in scary science where like people are born in a petri dish and like then put in some sort of matrix level shit. Like, everyone has a mother.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of where the grief and the devastation and the, you know, just the lack of being able to even fathom why mothers are so left behind in the world mm-hmm. and like so dismissed and not thought of, because at the end of the day, like, everyone has a mother. This world wouldn't exist. And so to be able to remind people of the universality of motherhood by showing connections between like adults and their mothers, or just talking to women who happen to have children who happen to have a different lens on life because of that, you know, that to me is like, check, check, like, that is what you're doing. And that piece with Angela and her mother, like, oh,
which part
I mean, literally all of it, because
people have told us that piece has really meant a lot to them, and we're huge fans of Angela's, so it was very cool.
Huge
It was so honest, that conversation, right? And I think Angela was able to articulate a lot of the, you know, some very sort of relatable emotions about our relationships to our mothers or parents,
and about
her approval and this mm-hmm. kind of story you tell yourself about what their expectations are,
exactly.
and whether that is really true or not. Yeah.
Yeah. And I grew up in an Indian family. And so for me, you know, I've also had a conversation with my mom where she was just like, Ambika, I do not think as deeply as you, you know, like I was like talking about my childhood and this and this and that. And, you know, she was like, where is all this coming from? Like, how long have you been thinking about it? And I was talking about things like my subconscious and how I was conditioned and like certain traumas that have like entrenched themselves in my soul and blah, 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 like informed my entire adulthood. And she was just like, I'm so sorry. Like, I never thought I fucked up your life. And I'm like, no, it's not that. And so even just the realness of that dialogue between a mother and a daughter of like, we see the world very differently. We see our relationship very differently. Like, I thought I did the best, most tender, most, you know, considerate things when I was raising you, but you don't see that, you know, that to me was both a dialogue in motherhood, in a daughter-mother dynamic, in generations, in mm-hmm. immigrant upbringing, in mm-hmm. how culture impacts the way we think. Like, it was everything.
Absolutely. I think you're totally right. I mean, especially like that generational element. I mean, I think like we've been raised or educated or cultured to sort of like we've been given this grace to be quite introspective.
Yeah.
And in a way that our mothers weren't given the room to do.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
And I think it's very confronting sort of between our generation and our parents when we're talking a lot about how we feel and it's a little, I mean, that tension was definitely there in that piece as well. And I think where like the older generation sometimes sees it as an indulgence.
Yes.
Well, yeah, definitely. Yes. I mean, that is, and there's truth to that, right? Because in a lot of these stories, there's a situation where, you know, the priority is just keeping the family together and keeping a head over people, yeah. a roof over people's heads and food on the table, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that is the whole thing. When we're talking about a generation here, are we talking about, I'm an elder millennial.
Oh, so I'm a geriatric millennial, okay. as they say.
All right, yes. So we're talking about, but I mean, that was always that is always the like criticism and joke about millennials too, right? Mm-hmm. The sort of like self-obsession, you know,
yeah.
and this kind of like, am I getting fulfillment or how am I feeling about this? And where did this come from? And this fashion, this fascination with yourself and your identity, right?
I think that's going to be, I mean, and that's Gen Z is going to be even more of that, right?
Yeah.
Sort of knowing what your boundaries are and what you feel is acceptable to your sense of self and the way you operate in the world. So it's going to be interesting if it's an even more sort of dramatic swing.
Yeah. My daughter has better boundaries than me already, and she's 3 years old. I'm like, damn, I'm like, thank God she's not a people pleaser, but holy shit, I am such a people pleaser.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
It's crazy.
That's a whole other subject we could talk a lot about.
I know. I want to hear about your guys' kids. I'm always like tempted to be like, tell me about your children.
Oh, I was talking about the people pleasing thing, but.
Oh, I mean, people pleasing is like one of the biggest themes of my life.
Yeah.
So we could go for days on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting to talk about how sometimes this sort of work can be seen as indulgent. And like, bear with me for a second, because I fully feel you. I have always been in a job, a salary job. I've never freelanced. Like, this podcast is my first foray into really kind of investing in what I believe to be like my work on this planet or my vocation, as Jungian, you know, analysts say. Where was the turning point for you? So when you were both in the pandemic, you know, you had been working previously for other people, I'm assuming, and all of a sudden we're like, we want to do something for ourselves and not have to like, you know, make anyone else's dream or vision come to life. Like, tell me about that reckoning, and how you decided to pursue this rather than going back into the way you had always lived and finding a more traditional sort of job.
I mean, I think we probably have different answers. I think for me, it was a total sneak attack where it's sort of thing where I didn't have a lot of options when we started this, you know? So it's funny, like when people, you know, we've had conversations before when people are like, how did you decide to make the jump? Like, it did not feel like a jump to me at all because it really felt like I had nothing else going on. I had been furloughed from my staff job. Freelance was like a really tricky business at the time, you know? So it wasn't like there was a lot of time to work on pitches and there wasn't a lot of interest or budget for that.
Yeah.
So when we started working on Mother Tongue, I think, you know, like we said, it started out sort of casually. And then, you know, as there was more of an interest and an appetite, that's when we started really considering dedicating ourselves to it. But as a sort of person in the world, like I never had any kind of ambitions to be an entrepreneur. I never saw myself as kind of starting my own thing. So it's been sort of a real surprise to me that I'm here right now. And the best surprise, one of the best surprises of my life, really. working with Natalia.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's been incredible for me, professionally and personally, but it really was this sort of like, yeah, sneak attack is how mm-hmm. I would put it. I never mm-hmm. kind of set out thinking like, this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to make the jump and do it. It was very circumstantial and lucky, I think.
Yeah. That sounds lucky and amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think for me, it was a bit of a different transition because I had actually been working freelance mm-hmm. for quite a while, probably since 2014. Yeah, because I quite actively left my job in London in 2014 with the idea to have a baby. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go out and set up my freelance life mm-hmm. Well in advance of that, so that the platform was there so that I could work in a more flexible way once that had happened, fingers yeah. crossed, and it did happen. Mm-hmm. And so I think I've really been working from home almost, you know, for 10 years mm. now. And so for me, it was sort of, I passed that threshold a long time ago where mm-hmm. I could ever imagine going back mm-hmm. to sort of a more office-driven context, mm-hmm. just because I've always really enjoyed sort of being in my own space and working quietly. And so it was less of sort of like a startling jump, just because I'd made that jump before, I suppose. But I mean, you know, like Melissa said, like, and in a different way, I suppose that one of the biggest gifts for me was that I've always really worked in a very siloed way. Mm-hmm. Of course, like as a journalist, you're out meeting people, you're out interviewing people, but then you're back at your screen writing and listening and yeah. editing, right? And I think, you know, doing this together as sort of two women who we have sort of these really strangely parallel lives, like our kids are the same age, mm-hmm. like, you know, there was just so, it's just been such a joy to have a sparring partner and to make something together, you know. Mm-hmm. I think like as a journalist, it's like a very lonely, lonely profession in that sense. And that has been one of the biggest gifts of this. It's like, I mean, every day we are speaking and engaging with the most incredible women, which is also just, yeah. I mean, like we literally pinch ourselves all the time. Like, how can this be what we're doing? You know?
Oh, that's amazing. Just
connect and hear these stories, and it both brings inspiration and enormous perspective as well, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of sometimes reframing our own experiences and being like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay. Mm-hmm. Deep breath, check this, because yeah. I think one of the things that we are constantly reminded about, and Melissa, correct me if I'm wrong, is like we are in awe of how much women have on their plates. Mm-hmm. And like, it's a constant reminder to just like, we don't know what's going on in other people's lives, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, especially these past few years through illness, through, you know, so much sort of darkness, it's like, it's just very, very humbling that we get to sort of, you know, be witness to these mm-hmm. incredible stories, which, you know, a lot of the time are survival stories.
Yeah.
And then stories of thriving on the back of that, you know, and that's, yeah, I feel like that's a huge gift that we can be witness to that.
That is incredible. That is what dreams are made of, I feel.
Yeah, which is why we, you know, I don't think that it's hard to let go of, you know, it's like mm-hmm. you feel very privileged to be here and trying to continue to do it.
Yeah. But just like you said, like they're stories of survival and mm-hmm. then thriving on the flip side. And that's exactly your guys' story too. Like you were like, we have to survive during the pandemic and look at the beautiful thing that has come out of that. So when you think about Mother Tongue and yourselves as people, what is your biggest ambition for this sort of collective body of work or this entity you've created? I mean, that's a huge question.
Big question. I think, you know, in a very general sense, mm-hmm. it's to just keep reaching more people.
Mm-hmm.
And that can take different forms. You know, I think we're starting to think of the magazine as a brand in itself,
mm-hmm.
Because people identify with Mother Tongue, you know, because they kind of point to it and they say, oh yeah, this is like what I've been trying to say about how I think about things, that I have questions, that I don't accept the status quo. And so we've realized that, like, of course the magazine is where it has started and our hearts are with the magazine, but we are also kind of opening our eyes to other ways that we can reach people and mm-hmm. Partnering with brands who are also interested in doing that. I mean, I think that's a very general kind of answer to your question, mm-hmm. but it's kind of this like small business mindset of how do you grow in a really authentic way? And like, yes. What does growing mean? You know? Yes,
absolutely.
And I think like one of the priorities for us is also like figuring out how to create a platform with longevity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mm-hmm. being open-minded to what shape it takes over time. And,
right.
You know, and I think that's sort of what Melissa is also getting at is that like, yes, it started as a magazine. It is a magazine. It will be for the foreseeable future,
mm-hmm.
but it might also, at some point we'd obviously love to explore more of a digital presence, but mm-hmm. in a way that feels slow and meaningful and not just doing it for the sake of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like running an independent print magazine in 2023 is obviously not the norm, right? Mm-hmm. In terms mm-hmm. of how content is delivered. But I think it's something that we feel really strongly about adhering to this idea of slow media and functioning mm-hmm. in a way that feels true to both how we want to communicate stories and also how this fits into our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. like full disclosure is like we publish twice a year because that's what we feel we can do. You know, it's like we are a small team. It's me and Melissa and Vanessa and, mm-hmm. you know, increasingly a few other wonderful women who are coming into the mix as assistants and editors and, but, you know, it's doing things in a way that's, again, like it comes back to this word, which is thrown around a lot, but like with intention, you know, and mm-hmm. we'd rather make something that feels like you want to keep it and hang on to it and reread it and pass it on to a friend
mm-hmm.
than to sort of churn it out. And I think that will sort of be how we grow is when, or how we continue growing is just mm-hmm. like step by step. In a way that feels true to us.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I feel also very, I don't know, my heart also wants to help. And so the one thing I will say to everybody out there is they do take advertisers, like flipping through and you wouldn't even know. Like you wouldn't even know what's an ad and what's not because it is so intentionally incorporated and it is just beautiful. But these are the things that we need to be supporting in the world because these are the things that are supporting so many people. You don't need banner ads. You need slow media.
Thank you so much.
That's my perspective as a strategist.
Yeah, but you know, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, it just it's actually really interesting because we've been having these conversations with some of the brands who we've ended up partnering with mm-hmm. where they sort of came to us and they're like, you know what? Like our Google dollars are not doing it anymore. They're like, something has changed. We are not seeing like the ROI on our digital ads. Mm-hmm. And they're like, so let's try it. You know, like let's try something different. And it's obviously super interesting. And you know, of course we're thrilled to work with these brand partners. But it is also this story of like, we really do feel like this is real estate that's meaningful, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like we're like, this is 6 months on a newsstand. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, like on a coffee table at home, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
The partners that we work with is like, it is kind of becoming this, like, I mean, it sounds cheesy to say, but it is kind of the mother tongue family, you know? And it's mm-hmm. like, it's this mindset of like, well, yeah, we are coming together to do this.
Yes. And I think there is so that your readers feel so much like trust and value when they're going through this, that any brand that appears in this space, like I immediately look them up and I immediately follow them just inherently, right? Because I'm like, well, I love Mother Tongue and I know they're not gonna compromise their integrity to work with a sellout brand that does not prioritize the same things they do.
I mean, then the beautiful thing is it's so self-selecting, you know?
Yeah, because absolutely.
Like the brands that want to be in there, like most of those conversations start with like, we have no print budget.
Yes, of course.
You know? And we're like, of course you don't. Who does?
Yeah,
right now?
Yeah,
and like,
who does?
Let's talk, because we love what you're doing. We want to stand next to you. You know, like maybe we're not saying things the way that you're saying them because that's not necessarily like our job. You know, maybe that's not like something that would come from us as a brand. However, we do want to show that we support these ideas. We should support this way of thinking.
Yes.
We want to be in there with you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, we're so proud of the brands that are in there with us. And that's not to say, I mean, a lot of them are quite vocal, but I think mm-hmm. it's like a really nice way to express what you believe in.
Absolutely.
Being in there. Mm-hmm. And our readers love them, I will say.
Like, yes.
Our readers are like, these are gorgeous. And like, mm-hmm. people have said what you have said to us, where it's like, I didn't know this brand, but I know I want to know them now. I know.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. As somebody who has been in advertising for years, like, these are the ideal scenarios, is where a brand's value system aligns so closely with a platform's value system that it feels so organic and natural, and like the overlay of your community and their community. Like it, this is exactly how the feeling of like discovering something beautiful should be. And I think sometimes in advertising, people lose sight of the fact that that's the feeling you should elicit, is this feeling mm-hmm. of like beautiful discovery through your value system and platforms you love. And so I'm your advertiser. There we go. I'm your strat. I'm your advertising plug. And I just want this magazine to have all of the success in the world, and for you too, to have all of the success in the world.
Thank you so much,
Ambika.
Thank you, guys. You'll never know what you've done for me.
Oh, you're so sweet.
You'll never know how much. Oh, what
you're just the most generous. Said. You're so incredibly generous with all of your thoughtful comments, really.
And it's the like, conversations that you're fostering. I mean,
yeah, and it's also, it's just like really humbling to like, honestly, like just the fact that like that you've so clearly like read everything so like thoroughly, like it's actually quite like, it gives me a little bit of goosebumps, because I think, aww, you know, we pour everything into it and then we kind of, you know, it's almost like then you don't want to look at it for a while, because mm-hmm. you're like, oh my god, I've been so close to it, I can't.
Yeah,
you know, read absolutely. It one more time. And then it's just, yeah, it's really, it's very, very reassuring and rewarding. The fact that you've just spent time with it and taken it in, and that it's meant something to you, then
yeah,
what more can we ask for?
It really has. And I know with certainty that it's been the same for many others.
For those of you who are running to buy Mother Tongue magazine, issue 6 literally just came out on Monday, and on the cover is Miranda July, no big deal. And they also have some incredible merch. I personally have the shirt that says Mother and Voter all at once. It's incredible. And their social media their Instagram account at mother_tongue_magazine is just a feast for the eyes. So please follow them. Definitely, definitely get issue 6 and all of the ones that came before it. And lastly, if you know of any brands looking to advertise in a space that is slow and intentionally consumed and strikes a chord with people in ways very few media platforms do, please send them Mother Tongue's way.